Job chapter number one. Job chapter number one. We are going to have an abbreviated lesson this morning. The reason, of course, is that the second service, we're going to be starting a few minutes earlier than normal for the memorial service for Brother Spoelstra. So we're going to have to get right to the lesson this morning and cover what we can. Last time we were together, we introduced the book of Job, and the purpose of looking at Job right now is as part of our Old Testament review, and specifically looking at each book in the Old Testament for the purpose of understanding why that book is in the Old Testament, what the point of the book is. Last time we were when we looked at Job, we found that Job is an Israelite. He's a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and he is the third son of Issachar. And Job was in the group of 70 that went down into Egypt when Jacob initially went down into Egypt. And if you remember at that time, Joseph was the second in command in Egypt. And anyway, Job is part of that group that goes down there. If you weren't with us last week, you might want to write down Genesis 46, verse 13. Genesis 46, verse 13, which identifies for you who Job is. The other way that you can identify who Job is if you look at other internal evidence in the book, you will notice at Job chapter 2, you have Job's quote-unquote three friends are mentioned. Job chapter 2, verse 11, you've got Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Nemethite. And we were able to identify who those guys basically were in terms of their lineage. And the Teman comes from Esau, Shua from the Shuites, and so forth. And so that, again, that gives you kind of a time frame as to when this occurred. And then we also noticed in chapter number 1 at verse 5, chapter 1, verse 5 in Job, it says this, "It was so when the days of their feasting were gone about that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually." So we also saw, in fact, I think Ross mentioned this, that yeah, here he's obviously offering sacrifices. And yet, which tribe is he not from? He's not from Levi. So you're told in the first few verses that Job is a man that feared God and eschewed evil. So if the Mosaic system was already in effect at this time, then there's no way that Job, on the one hand, could have offered sacrifices, and on the other hand, God said about him that he feared God. Okay? So when you read the book of Job, there's no reference to the Mosaic law. So there's a lot of internal information as well. Go ahead.
But they would have sacrificed before the Mosaic law.
Exactly correct. And that verse actually proves that there were sacrifices before the Mosaic law. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. The point simply being that, in other words, if the events of Job occurred after the Mosaic law, then Job would have been out of the will of God by offering these sacrifices. That's the point. And so you're right, sacrifices go all the way back to Cain and Abel. Okay? And so on. So the other thing is, with Job being a member of that group that went down into Egypt, that the initial group that went down to Egypt, Lori made the comment last time, well, Moses wasn't even born yet. Remember, Moses doesn't come along for three, four more generations and so forth. All right? So when you look at the internal evidence, the book of Job certainly is the book of Job is the oldest book in the Bible. Of all the books in the Bible, the book of Job is the oldest book. The book of Job precedes even the writing of the book of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and so forth. Those books were written by Moses when he came out of Egypt, when he brought Israel out of Egypt. Okay? The book of Job is quoted in the Bible over 60 times, which is very interesting. And sheds a lot of light in terms of the importance of the book of Job. And we ended last time by having you look at Job. Look over to the last chapter of the book of Job. Job chapter number 42, Job chapter 42. This is the verse that you want to remember that tells you the purpose of the book of Job. It tells you really what the book of Job is about. Job 42, verse 10. Job 42, verse 10 says this, "And the Lord turned the captivity of Job." Job is in satanic captivity, not because of something that Job did, but because of the rebellion that was going on among the angelic creation. And the dispute as to whether or not Job, or any man for that matter, would serve God out of any other motive except just personal gain. And Job is in satanic captivity. Job doesn't know that at the time. He doesn't understand that what he's involved in is something between God and Satan and so forth. As he's going through it, he doesn't know that. It's not until afterwards that he realizes that and so forth, because God talks to him and that type of thing. But what happens, Job is in satanic captivity, and it's going to take God to turn his captivity. That's why Job is going to be such a prominent and important book for the nation of Israel, and particularly the believing remnant out of Israel, during the tribulation period. They're going to have to recognize that just like it required God to turn Job's captivity, so too it's going to take God to turn the captivity of the nation of Israel during that tribulation period. The book of Job, doctrinally, even though it's a historical book, fits in the past, it actually is a book that is going to specifically apply during the tribulation period. Okay? And we, I think we also, did we also look at the reference in James? James chapter 5? Where he says there, you've seen the end of the, you've seen the patience of Job and the end of the Lord. Go back there real quick and notice this. James chapter 5. Look at James chapter 1 and James chapter 5. James chapter 1 and James chapter 5. James chapter number 1 says this. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which were scattered abroad, greeting. Now, who does James say he's writing to? Okay, who in the Bible, who were the 12 tribes? Okay, let me say this and get this point. In the Bible, the 12 tribes are always Israel. They are never the Gentiles. Okay, do I need to say that again? Yes, okay. I'm telling you, Christian people don't understand that. They read the book of James right there, and it says James to the 12 tribes, and they say, oh, well, that's just written to Christian Jews. Or that's just written to you and me as because you and I are spiritual Jews. That's just not true. That is a lie. And it's a lie that gets told again and again and again and again, generation after generation. That isn't what James says. He's right. In the Word of God, the 12 tribes are always the 12 tribes. James here does not make a mistake when he says the 12 tribes. Even the Apostle Paul, late in his ministry, late in the book of Acts, the Apostle Paul makes reference to the 12 tribes. He says, our 12 tribes. So when you study the cross-references to the 12 tribes and so forth, it's, you know, obviously in this context, it's the nation of Israel. James says he's writing to the 12 tribes. He's not writing to you and me in the dispensation of grace, and so on. James is just like Hebrews through Revelation, that section in your Bible, Hebrews through Revelation. Who does it sound like the book of Hebrews is written to and about? How about the Hebrews? That's kind of interesting, you know. And then James tells you right there, he's writing to the 12 tribes scattered. And remember that word scattered is Leviticus 26, fifth cycle of chastisement, when God was going to scatter Israel among the Gentiles. And James is writing in the fifth phase of the fifth course of chastisement. Peter comes next and says he's writing to the strangers scattered. Same idea. It's not the Gentiles. Peter's not writing to Gentiles. He's writing to Israel, scattered, and so on. And then you've got John, Jude, Revelation, and so forth. Anyway, James chapter 5. Now watch this. James tells his audience, James 5, verse 11, "Behold, we count them happy which endure." And then verse 11, he says, "Ye have heard of the what? The patience of what? Of who?" How would they have heard that? Read it in the Bible. And it says, "And has seen the end of the Lord." The end of the Lord is not there, the end in the sense that the Lord terminated and ceased to exist. But what is the sense? You've seen the end of the Lord. Meaning what? You've seen that it's going to take the Lord to turn your captivity. Only the Lord's going to be able to rescue you from from the you is the nation of Israel out there in that tribulation period, just like it took the Lord to turn the captivity of Job. So it's going to take the Lord to turn the captivity to rescue the believing remnant out of Israel from the hand of the oppressor, the wicked, as he's called, the Assyrian. Okay? He says, "You've seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy," and so forth. All right, go back with me then to the book of Job. Again, that was a little bit of review from last time. So go back with me to the book of Job, and let's get the stage here. Let's get the scene. We're going to try to review real briefly chapter number 1 and chapter number 2. "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil." That's how the book starts. The book starts with God the Holy Spirit, through the book of Job here, introducing us to this man named Job, where he's from, and more importantly, he was perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil. So what do you know about Job? What's that? He was a good guy in God's eyes, right? Okay. It says, "There were born unto him 7 sons, 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 a yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and a very great household." Now watch this. "So that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East." What do you know about Job at this point? Yeah, he obviously is greatest of all the men of the East and so forth. These numbers are going to be important to you when you get to the end of the book of Job, because you are told at the end of the book of Job that God basically blessed Job twice. That's what he had. You know, so anyway, that'll be important at the end of the book of Job. And again, it's not our purpose to go verse by verse through the entire book of Job. There's just no way we can do this, okay?
Who wrote this?
What's that? Okay, the question is, who wrote this? And then I think Joseph had a question too. Look over to Job chapter number... Let's see. Okay. Look over to Job 32. And I think this is who wrote the book. Job 32, verse 1. It says, "These three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Then was kindled the wrath of Elihu." Last time we looked at the fact that in the book of Job there are basically 5 players, and really there's actually 6. There's, let's just list them out for you real quick again. There's, of course, do I have an eraser up here? Of course, there's Job. Then there's Bildad. Elihu. Bildad, and in what's the guy's name in chapter 2? There's Shu. There's Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. I wasn't close, was I? Let me just do this. Okay. So you've got Eliphaz, you've got Bildad, and Zophar. Okay. But then you actually also have, and we talked about this last time, you've got God, you've got Satan. Okay. And then you've got, so we actually have 7, don't we? Then you've got this guy over in chapter number 32, who is Elihu, okay? See that? Elihu, E-L-I-H-U, chapter 32, verse 2, Elihu. That's the guy that appears to write the book itself, okay? And throughout the book of Job, you're first introduced to Job by God, and then you have this discourse that occurs between God and Satan in chapter 1 and 2. And then these three guys show up. Elihu, Bildad, Zophar, and they go through a series of attempts to explain to Job why he is suffering. Job speaks, then Elihu speaks. Then Job responds, then Bildad speaks. Then Job responds, then Zophar speaks, and so forth. And each of these guys speak 3 different times. And they're attempting to explain to Job why he's suffering. And each of these guys represents, just philosophy that you find in here today. All right? Eliphaz, he explains Job's suffering. He argues from the standpoint of human experience. That human experience is the standard to decide why you are suffering. Bildad argues from the standpoint of human tradition. The tradition of the elders, kind of a concept there. And then Zophar answers from the standpoint of human merit. Human merit. And when God You just have to read the book to really see the interaction that's going on and so forth. But they're called friends in chapter 2. But Job says about them, he says, miserable comforters ye are. Okay, none of them tell Job the essential reason why Job is suffering, because they don't know. And they're looking at it, again, from the standpoint of human experience, human tradition, and human merit. And they're offering various humanistic philosophies as to why Job is experiencing what he's experiencing. And none of them have the right answer. That doesn't mean that none of them say things that are true. They do say some things that are true. But they don't understand that fundamentally this has to do with this great debate between God and Satan in terms of what's the real motive intention as to why a man would serve God. And I want to get to that today, okay? So it looks like that guy's the guy in chapter 32 is the one who actually wrote the book, all right? Now, let's go back quickly to Job chapter number 1. Okay, so you see his substance, he has sons and daughters, he's very wealthy. You can see his intention at verse 4 and 5 is to make sure that in case his children have sinned, that he has made provision for that sin. Okay, so now look at verse 6, chapter 1, verse 6 of Job. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. You do want to recognize that the phrase there, the sons of God, in that verse is a reference to the angelic race. It's a reference to the angelic race. Just a quick cross-reference, because we don't have time to look at all the references indicating that. But a quick cross-reference, if you look over to chapter 38, you'll understand, as well as with that context, how you know it is the angelic race. Look over to Job 38 at verse 4. Job 38 verse 4, and you'll get a cross-reference to understand why the phrase there, sons of God, is a reference to the angels. Job 38 verse 4 says this, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding." This is God talking to Job. "Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fashioned? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof?" What's he talking about in verse 4, 5, and 6? The actual creation, right? And then he says at verse 7, "When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God did what? Shouted for joy." Now, how do you know that the phrase, the sons of God, in that verse is not a reference to sons of Adam? Because they weren't there. Okay, it's definitely the angel. So go quickly back to chapter number 1. So you're told at verse 6 that there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. Now, several things you can learn, by the way, from that passage, if you'll be open to get it. And that is the fall of Satan has already occurred prior to the writing of the book of Job. By the way, how do you know that? Okay, he fell before man was created, and obviously man's created and so forth. What else do you see? He's called Satan. Yeah, isn't that interesting? What else do you see? You see that even though this is after the fall, the sons of God, the angels, come to give an account, because they do that on a regular basis. And who else still is able to come and talk to God? See, sometimes people have the idea that God and Satan have no interaction at all. That since the fall, Satan was cast to hell and has been in hell ever since. And that's just not true. That's pure pagan religion and tradition. That's just not true. When you look in the Bible, there are actually several accounts when you see Satan communicating with God. Not in the sense of buddies and best friends by any means. But certainly, like in the context here, Satan comes among them, he's accountable, and he comes among them, and in their presence, he challenges God. In the presence of the sons of God, in the presence of the angels that didn't fall, he challenges God. You'll see, now God is the one that introduces Job and so forth, okay? I think your hand was up and then Ross's hand went up. Go ahead. What's that? Yes, and we'll get there in just a second. She said, well, it's interesting to also notice where he's coming from. He's coming from the earth. To and fro on the earth. And we'll look at that in just a second here. Go ahead, Ross.
So I'm just assuming that this is intended so how Satan will be the presence of God.
That's exactly my point. See, the point is that even though Satan lost access to is the stones of fire, Ezekiel 28, Isaiah 14, and so forth. The question is, how is Satan still able to have access to God even though he's sinful and God can't be in the presence of sin and that kind of thing? The angels had a particular place where they were to, and still to this day, go to on a regular basis to give an account to God. And that, so God, there are a lot of territories in heaven where God is, he goes to and that type of thing. And this is one of them. That's where he comes to. He doesn't go to the stones of fire, that particular place referred to in the book of Ezekiel. Okay, Satan is not kicked out of heaven. Satan does not lose access to his places in heaven until the middle of the tribulation period. And that's future. Okay. So you can see right here in the context that Satan does still have access to go and actually talk to God. And what happens again here in the context, you have all the angels that come and they present themselves to give an account. And it's in that context, God brings up Job and Satan challenges God. All right. So let's keep reading. Verse 6 now. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. Now look what the Lord does. The Lord said unto Satan, "Whence comest thou?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it." Okay, that's what Shalei was talking about. What's that all about? What's that? He's claiming his territory. Write down next to that verse, Genesis 13, verse 17. Genesis 13, verse 17. When God promised Abraham the land, God told Abraham to do something in particular in relationship to claiming it as his own, even though it wasn't his own yet. What did God tell Abraham to do? He said, walk through the length of it and the breadth of it. Go and walk to and fro in it. When Satan here says, when God says, whence comest thou? Satan says, from walking to and fro in the earth and up and down in it. You know what he's saying? He is claiming authority and ownership of the earth by this point. When Satan tempted Adam and Eve, remember, Adam and Eve were to be the monarch of the planet, right? Adam and Eve were to be the monarch of the planet. And when Satan tempts Adam and Eve, that crown falls off of their head and Satan picks it up and says, it is mine. Okay? Understand what happened there? So when Satan says, from walking to and fro on the earth, he's saying, hey, I'm walking in the I come from the territory that belongs to me. Now, okay, so everybody got that. That's huge. That's gigantic. When Jesus Christ was tempted by Satan, and remember Satan says, hey, if you'll fall down and worship me, then I'll give all this to you, for it has been delivered to me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. And Jesus Christ did not dispute his claim. Isn't that fascinating? Okay, keep reading. So the Lord says this, verse 8, and the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Okay, so now get your pens ready. Look at Satan's response. He says this, and this is going to get into what the purpose of the book of Job is about, that great dispute, what Satan disputes. And he says this, verse 9, you want to mark verse 9, 10, and 11. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? That's Satan's dispute about the relationship of man to God. Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him, about his house, about all that he has on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he has, and he will curse thee to thy face. See what in saying that, what is Satan saying about the relationship from God, Job to God? What's that? He's only in it because of your capacity and willingness to bless him. He's only in it for the money. Think about that. Satan says it's not possible for man to serve God out of any other motive except just to get. Satan says it's not possible for man to serve God out of any other motive except that you're going to bless him. In other words, he's saying it's impossible for man just to serve you by faith. Just to trust you. And you see the difference? Do you understand the difference there? See, if your relationship to God is, hey, I'm going to serve God as long as he blesses me, then that is not a relationship of trust. It's not a relationship of gratitude or love. You ever heard people say, oh, I tried God and it didn't work for me? Well, wait. I tried that Christian stuff and it just didn't work for me, you know. Well, like you tried drugs too, and you, so that works for you, huh? You tried to, you know, the alcohol, so that works for you. Great, yeah. God or drugs, you know, God or dope, God or sex, or God or, you know, what do you want? It's crazy. Anyway, go ahead. Yes.
Because you wouldn't, man in his own nature wouldn't want to be a Christian.
Yes, yes, yes.
So what's the difference between...
Yeah, what's the difference between, okay, I got saved because I didn't want to go to hell.
Yeah.
Right? Notice Job's question is, Satan's question is, does Job fear God for naught? What's at the heart of Job's relationship to God? See, I would suspect that even though you got saved, it's like I got saved because I didn't want to die and go to hell, but your relationship to God now is not based upon that. Your relationship to God is based upon what?
Trust.
Gratitude. Thankfulness. See that? That's the difference there. Okay? All right, so keep reading. So what happens is this. The Lord, verse 12, and the Lord said unto Satan, behold, all that he has is in thy power, only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth in the presence of the Lord. And what happens? In one day, he loses everything except his wife. Okay? That's going to be important here, by the way. You'll see why in just a second. But in one day, he loses all of his livestock. He loses all of his family. He loses everything he has. Again, and I say this seriously, but jokingly, but serious, except his wife. You can see that we're going to just get down this. Look at verse 16. Verse 16, while he was yet speaking, there came also another. Verse 17, while he was yet speaking, there came also another. Verse 18, while he was yet speaking, there came also another. And each of these guys that come and report this, and all your livestock was taken, all your cattle, your camel, it was all destroyed. Your house was destroyed and your children are destroyed. Now look at verse 20. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and does what? See that? And said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Oh, that's a key passage there. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. When calamity hits, what do people say?
God did it.
Yeah, look at your insurance contract. Your insurance contract say acts of God. You know, earthquake, acts of God. You know, fire, act of God. It's charging God foolishly. Foolishly is in the sense of completely not thinking. But it is so common that when tragedy happens, we all want to blame God. Job doesn't do that. He falls down and he worships. When he rents his mantle and so forth, what's that all about? What does he understand? Dust came I, and dust I'm going to return. See that? Go ahead, Richard.
Is Satan correct then in assuming that his motivation is fear? He says, does he fear God or not? Is that really what his motivation was? The way he reacts here?
No, Job's reaction here is a reaction of faith. Very positive, that he looks at the circumstances and he realizes that he is not to evaluate his relationship to his Creator by looking at the circumstances. See that? The circumstances just come crashing down around him and he falls down and worships God. Circumstances are not the standard upon which you decide God's favor or disfavor with you. Isn't that fascinating? Okay, we have to move along here real quickly, okay? So obviously, Satan's first objection is proved false. Well, Satan's not done yet. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said, Satan, from whence comest thou? Satan answered, the Lord said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down in it. Now, make the connection as well, by the way, that Satan basically is saying the earth is mine, and God's saying, okay, fine, the earth's yours, but I got my man on the earth too. And through my man on the earth, I'm going to get the earth back. That's... God, who is it that brought up Job in the first place? Satan didn't bring up Job. God brought up Job to Satan. God says, where have you been? Where you come from? He says, walking up and down in the earth. He says, the earth's mine. And God says, you know what? But I got a man down there. Check him out. Because through man, I'm going to get the earth back. See that? So Satan says, yeah, right. I'll attack him. If I beat Adam and Eve that easily, I'll beat this guy. No problem. And takes all the substance, and yet he still worships. So Satan again comes and says, walking to fro on the earth, walking up and down in it. Verse 3, the Lord answered, hast thou considered my servant Job? There is none like him in all the earth. Notice the issue is the earth, a man in the earth, a man in the earth, a man in the earth. See that? He says, one that eschews evil still holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. Satan answered the Lord, said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man has will he give for his skin. Put forth thine hand now, and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. So now what's Satan's accusation against man? Yeah, you take his life, you affect his physical, his bone, his health, and he will curse you to your face. In saying that, Satan is saying that man, it's impossible. It's not possible for man to serve you just by faith, just trusting you. He'll curse you to your face. See that? Go ahead. We got to hurry real quick here.
Satan says that because he believes it or he doesn't know man?
He says that because... Remember, he says this among the other angels. He's disputing God's authority and right to rule over man and man's willingness to serve God by faith. And he disputes it because he doesn't believe it's possible. Okay? Does that answer your question here?
Yeah, so yeah, he doesn't know. He criticizes God's creation of man.
I'm sorry?
He criticizes God.
Absolutely. Yes, that's exactly right. In attacking Job, he is attacking God. Yes, sir. That's exactly what he's doing here. Yes. Okay, real quickly, let's do this now. Watch. Keep going. So you can see he says at verse 6, and the Lord says, Satan, behold, he is in thine hands, but save his life. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord, smote Job with sore boils from the soles, foot to the crown. I mean, from head to toe, this poor guy's got these just painful boils and sores and everything. Now, remember I said earlier that he lost everything except his wife? Look at what happens at verse 9. Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. I got to tell you, this is not the most spiritually minded wife a man has ever had. Okay? Wives, can I talk to you just a second about this? When your husband is under affliction and difficulty and hardship, this is not the proper response, okay? You want to go to your husband and you want to encourage him in the Lord. You want to encourage him why he should walk by faith and trust in the Lord. You want to be there by his side. You don't do this, okay? This is a tremendous example of what not to do. She's an absolute all-out apostate unbeliever. Curse God and die. By her saying that, who is she agreeing with?
Satan.
She's absolutely agreeing with Satan. She's a Baal worshiper. Isn't that fascinating? I know I saw a couple of hands up. Let me just read this next couple of verses here and then we'll take questions. Look at verse 10. Look as he says, but he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. He probably didn't get supper that night. Anyway, he says, what? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? And then the comment is, in all this did not Job sin with his lips. Now, Job does have some problems later on. I mean, as the suffering intensifies and goes on and lasts a long time and so forth, yeah, Job does have some problems in his thinking. We're not going to get into all that this morning. But again, what you want to understand is that what Job is experiencing, Job is taken into satanic captivity. Job does not know that. He's not aware of that. That's something going on between God and Satan. And Job is taken into satanic captivity in relationship to the disputed rightful claim over this earth. Who truly has the right to walk up and down in the earth, and it's theirs. And God fundamentally is saying, hey, the earth is mine, and my man will run it. Satan, you've got it now, and you're in control now, and you've got all these powers and so forth. It's incredible. You see Satan's powers there, by the way. He says, but you know what? When God asked Job that series of questions in chapter 38 through 42, remember the series of questions we studied when we studied about science and so forth? All of those questions are designed to convey to Job, hey, Job, I've got this thing all worked out. Don't you worry. You just have to trust me through this thing. Okay? Okay, real quickly, I know there were some hands up. Who had a question or a comment? Question or a comment? Anybody? Okay, all right. We're going to go ahead and stop for now. We'll pick up here next time, and then we're going to